Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Grass, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years.
We're Ixachana Kwan, your host for today.
Hi, my name is Sophia.
My name is Keegan.
My name is Sierra.
My name is Jaylin.
I'm Jordan. Would like to thank Ak Kwan Ka Taku Kwan.
Our first guests on today's show are to preview Sunday's Elizabeth Pradovich celebration at Klingon Haida Community Council Buildings.
From the Alaska Native Sisterhood and Sister Kevin Allen and Alicia Marriott, welcome.
This is Jay Lynn. Can you please introduce yourselves?
Leika Kenak Alicia Yuchat Duasak. My name's Alicia Marriott.
My name's Kevin Allen.
This is Jordan. Before we learn more about the Alaska Native Sisterhood and Elizabeth Pradovich, can you please give us the details for Sunday's Elizabeth Pradovich Day celebration?
This Sunday, February 16th, from noon to 2 at the Juno Klingit and Haida Community Council Building, which is the Blue Building, 3235 Hospital Drive. We'll have sandwiches and salad, cake, coffee, a guest speaker, and a dance group.
And we'll have a keynote address by Ernestine Hayes, and we'll have even a proclamation from the governor celebrating Elizabeth Pradovich Day.
This is Keegan. Can you please describe your work with the Alaska Native Sisterhood?
Well, I've been a member since 2016, and most of the work that I have done revolves mainly around fundraising and also advocating up at the legislature for various pieces of legislation.
This is Sierra. What inspired you to be a member of ANS?
This is Alicia, and I've only been a member for a little over a month, so I'm very green. But I had a family member pass away who was a member of Camp 70, and they had a call to membership at the memorial. So I took that opportunity to join, and I look to a lot of my cousins and my aunties and my uncles who have been members of ANS and AMB for a long time. And personally, it's important to me to advocate for Alaska Native rights, and also to continue to educate myself and people about our history, the culture, where discrimination still occurs, and just lots of learning.
What inspired me was a relative, Lillian Petershore. She was very curious, first of all, because the camp needed a youth representative to their convention to Portland. And she had asked me, and it was actually kind of funny because I had asked, don't you have to be a girl to join the Alaska Native Sisterhood? And she said, no, it's not like that at all. Actually, it's different now. You can join whichever camp you want, whether it be brotherhood or a sisterhood camp. So that was very interesting. And after that, I think the kind of work we had done really inspired me to just continue on being a part of the camp.
This is Jaylin. Thinking of Sunday's celebration, can you please help our listeners learn more about Elizabeth Pradovich?
Yeah, so this particular celebration marks 75 years from the passing of the Anti-Discrimination Bill of 1945, or House Bill 14. So that's a big deal. I think in a lot of ways, Elizabeth Pradovich and her husband paved the way for the national civil rights movement and legislation, anti-discrimination legislation at the national level as well. in Alaska, and in Juneau in particular, or Southeast Alaska, I think a lot more people are familiar with Elizabeth Perachevich. But otherwise, I read Annie Bucevher's book, The Fighter in Velvet Gloves, recently, and I really didn't know a whole lot about her before that. I think there's more information now that we have the internet out there, but it's not something that's widely taught in the schools, not when I was growing up. I think now a little bit more. She was born in Petersburg. She was adopted. That was something that stuck out to me because my mother was adopted as well. One of the things that I read in the book, that without giving away too much, that I thought was really cool, if you notice when you go over to the airport, it's on Shel Simmons Drive. And I never knew what the significance was. But Shel Simmons owned Alaska Coastal Airlines, which was a float plane company in the 1940s. I don't know how long they were around. But when Governor Greening introduced the anti-discrimination bill in 1943, it passed the House, but it didn't pass in the Senate. And back then, the legislature only met every other year. So they had to wait 2 years to have the bill heard again. And so in between that time, Elizabeth met with the governor and said, let's come up with a plan. What are we going to do? So he said, why don't you fly around Southeast Alaska and encourage more Alaska Native people to run for office? She also talked about the importance of voting and fighting for Alaska Native rights. And so going back to Shel Simmons, he allowed her to fly anytime there was an open seat standby because she didn't have the funds to be flying all over the place. And she still had she had young children, and she was able to take her youngest with her on her lap. And she even went up north to a couple of villages. So she was down on the ground speaking with the community and really just canvassing and doing the work that I think that's one of the things that I didn't know that was pretty amazing and inspiring to me.
Elizabeth Perachevich and her husband Roy were the, for different times, were grand presidents of the Alaska Native Sisterhood and Brotherhood. But what is a grand president? You see, there's all the local camps, and then at a higher level, on top of all the camps, is the grand camp. So you have the grand officers. And so they were running the show, Elizabeth and Roy, and really advocating hard to make sure that these rights that that we did not have were going to be made possible. And it's rather interesting how that dispute in 1945 went, right? I mean, it's just nuts what things were like back then. I mean, you have one of the senators who just gets up and just asks the question, who are these people, but barely out of savagery, who want to associate with us whites with 5,000 years of recorded civilization behind us? He makes a claim like that. And then, of course, Elizabeth Perachevich, as smart as she is and knows what to say, immediately snaps back, right, and says, I would not have expected that I, who am barely out of savagery, would have to remind gentlemen with 5,000 years of recorded civilization behind them of our Bill of Rights. It's quite impressive, the history she made and just how fearless she was in her advocacy. And so I think it's moments like those in history that really, really could grasp somebody to read more about this before the coin, hardly recognized civil rights leader. But luckily, now that we have the coin, I think she's getting a little bit more recognition.
That's right. We can buy the coin now.
Yep.
This is Keegan. May I ask how Elizabeth Perachevich affected you personally?
This is Alicia. I'll just say my grandma used to tell me stories about Elizabeth growing up, and I don't remember a lot of them, but she did share that they are from the same clan, which is Lucahati or Raven Sockeye from the Haines area. So that's pretty cool. And I think she also has the same middle name, or my grandma's middle name is the same as her birth mother. So that's where I'm kind of personally relating. But I also just think she's incredibly inspiring, especially for a time when I don't think a lot of women were being recognized for the kind of work that she was doing.
I think she affects us all personally to a degree. I mean, when you really think about it, if there weren't such tireless advocates at that time like her around, it would be a very, very, very strange future I think we would live in. So I really do believe that in some way she has affected all of us in a very, very good way.
If you're just tuning in, we're IAK, your host for today, and we're speaking with the sisters Kevin Ellen and Alicia Marriott of Alaska Native Sisterhood about Sunday's Elizabeth Paradovich Day celebration.
This is Colin. What should we do to educate people?
It's a very good question, Colin. What we should do to educate folks, I mean, we already know the schools really like celebrating Elizabeth Paradovich Day and make sure her story is told.
I would say seek out information. You can find information on the web. The book that Annie Buchiever wrote with her son, Roy Paradovich Jr., is a good read, quick read. Attend cultural events. And events that ANS and A&B put on. But there are a lot of opportunities in town to learn about Elizabeth Paradovich and what she's done for the people of Alaska and civil rights. So that's a good start.
This is Jordan. Do you think we should do a parade for her like they do in Sitka?
I didn't even know they did that.
Yeah,
they also are doing one in Wrangell, too, I believe. It's a very good idea. I think a parade would be really nice. It would be really nice if everyone had gotten together from all the different tribal organizations, whether it be Tlingit and Haida, Douglas Indian Association, Gold Belt, Sea Alaska. We all just came together and had a nice little walking celebration of just what we have today, thanks to her and the many others that worked with her.
This is Keegan. Please remind us details for Sunday's event.
Well, Keegan, we're going to have sandwiches. We're going to have salads. We're going to have desserts. We're going to have a keynote speaker, Ernestine Hayes. We're going to have some awards that the local camps like giving out to their members for excellent service. And we're also going to have a proclamation, a piece of paper, from the governor celebrating Elizabeth Paradovich Day.
And the All Nations Children Dance Group will be joining us too. So it's all ages, free and open to the public. Bring your friends. And it's from noon to 2 at the Juno Tlingit and Haida Community Council building.
Well, I believe that's all the questions we have for you. Gunach chish to both of you for speaking with us today. This is Ich Sachan Achkwan hosting Juno Afternoon. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more interviews.
Ah! college degree leads to better earning potential. Financial aid and scholarships help you achieve your goals. The Financial Aid Office at the University of Alaska Southeast helps you find scholarships. Apply for financial aid and learn strategies to get the most out of your investment in education. Apply for UA scholarships before February 15 with a single application. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu.
Support comes from Northland Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northland Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. NorthlandAudiology.com or 789-6780.
We're Ichsachan Achkwan, your Juno afternoon hosts for the day.
Back in October, our group got to travel to Fairbanks for the 2019 AFN Convention and Elders and Youth Conference. We'd been practicing interview techniques here at KTOO and got to speak with several elders. Here is a selection from my interview with Liz Medicine Crow. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Liz Medicine Crow. My Tlingit name is Katsas. My Haida name, my Chudkil name is Lagunai. And I am from Kihkwan, Cake, Alaska, and I work for First Alaskans Institute. I'm the president and CEO, and we are honored to host the annual statewide Elders and Youth Conference.
So what is your heritage, and what languages do you speak?
I am Tlingit and Haida. My Haida family comes from Haida Gwaii, and I also have Haida family in Haidaberg and elsewhere, but those are the places where my family is from. I am also from Tlingit territory. I am also Tlingit. I come from Kihkwan. I am Raven Kachadi on my Tlingit side. On my Haida side, I am Katsah Kaskusu Dikwalagan, so I am an eagle woman. And I'm Chichkitne. That's my clan, and our crest is the hummingbird. The languages I speak are Tlingit, Haida, and English. I'm proficient in English, and I'm learning to be more proficient in both of my other languages. I'm a new learner, and it's really exciting.
Why did you come to AFN and Elders and Youth?
Well, I came to First Alaskans Institute's Elders and Youth Conference because we're the organization that hosts it. And then we are a sister organization to a lot of our other Native organizations across the state, and one of those is the Alaska Federation of Natives. Their conference starts tomorrow on Thursday. So after we conclude our First Alaskans Institute Elders and Youth Conference, then we are able to then participate in their annual membership convention, which starts tomorrow. So that's why I'm able to be here for the whole week.
What keeps you busy when you're at home?
When I'm at home in my village, my family keeps me really busy. I want to make sure I spend time with them. I want to make sure I get out on the land. I want to make sure I get out on the water. Depending on what season it is, I'm also harvesting a lot of food or processing a lot of food because that's what we do.
So what was it like growing up, and what were you doing when you were my age?
So for me, when I was growing up, when I was home in my village, it was like everybody was family. Like no matter where we were, whether we were playing out on the beach, we were running around and playing in the woods, no matter where we were, there was always somebody with their eye on us, make sure we are safe. And if we were up to no good, any adult would be able to like, hey, I'm going to tell your mom, or hey, you kids knock that off. And we were raised as a community. And now that I'm older, I really appreciate that. And so when I was young, that's what it was like. It was totally different for me when I my family had to move from my village to the city. That was a really hard transition for me. I felt really lonely and lost and disconnected from my community and my family. And I was really blessed, though, and lucky that because I'm from Kihkwan, it's always been my home, and so I've just been able to go back and forth as needed. That was a really hard transition for me as a kid. And I'm so grateful for my family, my community, for our culture, for our ways of life, because that's what helped keep me really grounded. And through the tough times and that lonesomeness, I always knew how to reconnect, and that was really simple because it just meant getting out of the land or the water. And it was like being on the land and the water was like being with a relative or being with my community, so it was easy to find a place to feel okay. When I was 13, 8th grade, I was playing a lot of basketball.
I thought that was life. I was eating a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and drinking a lot of Pepsi. I don't drink any soda anymore, and I don't eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches anymore. I think I overdid it when I was in that age group.
I actually don't drink soda either. Cool. When I do, it's very rarely, and it's mainly like a little treat, like just special times. Mm. What is your favorite place and why?
That's a hard one. Anywhere in my community, my ultimate favorite place, there's two places. Okay. On the water or on the land. There's a theme here. I love being in our canoe, our yauk. I love going on canoe journey. I love being in the ocean. We practice, my sisters and I started a few years ago practicing our Tlingit way of going into the ocean as a daily practice, or as often as we can practice. And that's really been incredible in terms of boosting my immune system, but also my internal spiritual and mental health and focus. And then also in the berry bushes. I love picking berries.
Did you have a life goal? And if so, did you accomplish it?
Well, yes, I had multiple life goals. I wanted to do so much and I was interested in so many things. And in terms of accomplishing it, I'm still on that path. So let me tell you a story. I really wanted to be an artist. I love the arts. I love creating art. And I grew up in a family of artists and was so inspired by all of them. And I really wanted to be an artist. When I was about 10 or 11 years old, I was at my grandparents' house in Cake. And my grandpa called me over. He was having a coffee time with some other elders. And they were speaking in Tlingit. And he said that when I got old, I was going to go and become a lawyer and then come home and help our people. And I was like, no, I'm going to be an artist. That's my internal dialogue. I'm going to be an artist. And so I went off and I went to art school. I went to the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. I loved it. It was an incredible experience. And as I was there, things started happening in my life that put me in situations where I was advocating for people. And then when I decided to go and I got my Bachelor's of Arts degree, and then I was going to go and try to pursue my Master's of Fine Arts. And as I was waiting to find out if I got into the one school I applied to, because that's my way, is if it's meant to happen, I'll get in. And so I only choose the one place I want to go. Mm-hmm. And as I was waiting, I started thinking, is this the best I can do on behalf of my people? Like, we were raised to think of our community and our peoples and to have that responsibility. And I was thinking to myself, like, my parents and my grandparents, my aunties and uncles, my community, they sacrificed so that we could, you know, get the education, we could have these activities, we could have all this stuff so that we could be better, be stronger, learn as much as we could, and then use it to help our community. And I really start thinking, am I doing the right thing? And as I was thinking that, I got a letter from my sister. I didn't tell anybody I was thinking that. That's my private thoughts. I got a letter from my sister in a book, and it was the LSAT study guide. And you have to pass the LSAT in order to get into law school. About a week later, I got a letter from the school I applied to for my MFA, and they declined me. I was waitlisted. I was like number 5 out of 4 spots in the MFA program. Wow. And I was like, well, I guess I got to try to go to law school. So I did, and I wanted to understand self-determination and self-governance in the context of our Indigenous peoples, what's really ours, and how can we make systems that reflect our true cultural knowledge, heritage, and practices. So that's why I wanted to go, because going to law school helped me see what the Western way was, so I could peel that onion and then really understand these things that my grandparents and other elders had shared as I was growing up. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I was able to, like, really come full circle. And of course, who was right? My grandfather called it from the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. So being in service to our community is really that lifelong goal.
To listen to the rest of my interview with Liz Medicine Crow, please go to ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
This is Colin. Here's a selection from my interview with Delacini at AFN Elders and Youth.
This is Colin Rose today at AFN Elders and Youth Conference. I am here with Delacini, and she has agreed to let me interview her. And my first question will be, would you please introduce yourself?
Hawa Gunashish. My Tlingit name is Katsawa. My Haida name is Safkawas. My English name is Della Jackson Cheney.
Thank you very much. And may I ask you about your heritage and what languages do you speak?
Hawa Gunashish, yes. My heritage is Alaska Native. My mother is Haida and my father is Tlingit. And I'm learning Haida and I understand a little bit of Tlingit. And I take classes with the Tlingit language also.
Thank you. And my third question will be, why did you come to Elders and Youth /AFN?
This is my 36th year at Elders and Youth. And I used to travel with my mom, Mona Jackson, from Cake and Haida Gwaii. And I just continue the journey. She left us in 2005. So I love coming to visit with old friends and make new friends and to participate in learning more about our community of Alaska Native people.
And my next question will be, what keeps you busy at home?
I'm always getting ready to weave. So that means the season comes and goes, and then I also harvest and process food like fish, seaweed, and deer meat if I get it, and moose meat if I get it. So I'm always busy with something.
All right. And this question, you don't have to answer it if you're not comfortable, but what was it like growing up? And what were you doing when you were about my age?
I was in Cake High School. I remember my father and I working in the kitchen. He was cooking and I was washing the dishes. And he looked, while he was stirring his pot, he looked towards me and says, "Sister, I'm so happy you're going to stay home with us for your high school years." I was kind of taken aback by that statement, because I had always dreamed of going away to high school in Sitka. But since they started the high school in Cake, my father expected me to stay home, which was fine with me. But when he first told me that, I felt a little bit of sadness that I was not going to be able to be away from home. But after a lot of thought and after graduating from Cake High School, I realized the importance of our cultural ways that I practice. If I had gone away, I would not know how to take care of my opposite family and my in-laws, and learning about loving my family from all of my brothers and my sisters, my mother and my father and my grandmother and my aunties and uncles taught me about how to be a sister, a mother, a grandma, an auntie. So it was important that I stay home. I realize that now.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite place?
My favorite place is when I'm getting ready to weave. I go to this place that my father told me to create in my mind, to find this place where I can be anything I want to be in the world. And that place in my mind is to be a weaver. So that is where I go to prepare myself to weave. And before I weave every day, that's the place I go to calm down, to visit my grandmother, my mom, my dad, and just to remember the love that they shared with me.
To listen to the rest of my interview with Delacini, please go to ktoo.org/Juno Afternoon. This is Ixachan Akwan hosting Juno Afternoon. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more interviews.
Tsunamis can strike within minutes of an earthquake. Knowing your risk before disaster hits could save your life. Using the online tool at tsunami.alaska.edu, you can determine whether your house, workplace, or school is in the hazard zone. So whether you live, work, or travel in coastal Alaska, learn more today at tsunami.alaska.edu. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Earthquake Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is Jordan. Once we got back from AFN and Elders and Youth, we spoke with some local educators. Here is some selection from Colin and Kendra's interview with Ki Li'ish, Lyle James.
Wasa iduasak.
Ikatuasak lingik ina ki Li'ish. Wa ekoa. Wasa iduasak.
Klingik kinach shishan. And may you please introduce yourself fully.
Dekina Haida, Sutran Zimzian, Irish, African American, Akua, English City. Da Kitlachu Duasak, Akshawadia, Kitchan, Kwan, Akua, Metlakatla Kwandak, Akilkuas, Stakatlanedi, Akua, Filipino, Kayuk Kwan, Hawaiian City. Gunalchish, Akadi Sari.
So, is there any type of music like you listen to or slash like?
I pretty much like all music, aside from country.
sorry for all those who like country, but I don't like country. I mostly like traditional sounds. Mm-hmm. Like Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian songs. And songs that represent a person's identity. Those are my favorite.
What about classical?
Yeah.
Okay.
I grew up on it and used to play it all the time.
You mean like where it's just instrumental, like Beethoven?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay, cool.
I used to be in band middle school and high school. Yeah. Even Todd and Cake. Mm.
I wish they did that when I was there. So then when you were about my age, what did you do?
Went to school.
Like anything else, like hobbies or?
No, I'm just teasing. I did band music because it was my escape from my other classes, actually. And my music teacher, he was a lot of help, and he helped me de-stress from classes that I wasn't the best at. So I was actually in pep band for all 4 years of high school, and jazz band. The instruments I used to play started off playing tuba, and then I also started learning baritone, trombone, clarinet, majority of the wind instruments except for flute and piccolo. Those were like the worst. You get lightheaded after trying to play that instrument after 1 minute. But that's what I did. I also enjoyed hunting and fishing on my downtime.
So where are you originally from?
Huna and Cake. Those are places I grew up.
How was it?
Loved it.
What got you in the form line?
I seen Nathan Jackson, Wayne Price, and a lot of our family members from home were actually doing art, the carving, and I wanted to learn it, but didn't have the opportunity until I actually became an adult to actually do it. And now that I have the opportunity, I'm definitely taking full advantage of that. Because it's something that I really enjoy because it shares our history in just one image. Some other things that I used to enjoy doing in high school was wrestling. Definitely did that all 4 years of high school. And the reason I enjoyed it is because it allowed me to travel places and meet people.
Nice.
I tried basketball, but I wasn't very good at that.
Oh.
But I did enjoy it.
Do you like have any hobbies like today on your free time or?
Yeah, my wife and I, we have a dance group that we meet once a week, and it consists of 150 plus dancers as of today, and we teach song and dance to families. And within our dance group, we make sure everybody understands that there is a background check before they can come into our dance group. And what we pay attention to is the harsh backgrounds, like sexual assault, because we want that space to be as safe as possible for the kids and the mothers or anybody who has experienced that kind of trauma. So yeah, that's what I enjoy on my downtime, along with hunting and fishing.
What are some obstacles that you overcame when you started to be a teacher?
I actually was a high school dropout. Not many folks know that there, only because it happened my senior year. And it impacted my life enough to where I did nothing but work. And knowing what kind of jobs I could do without a high school degree put a lot of limits on what I can apply for. My first obstacle was to receive my high school diploma or GED before my daughter was born. That was my first goal. And when I completed that, I happened to come across the principal of Yakuske Takahide, who was actually looking for a Tlingit language teacher. And I had just enrolled into classes at the university after graduating with my GED. And one of my classes was Tlingit with Florence Shakely, who was actually the Tlingit language teacher at JDHS at Thunder Mountain. And when the principal at the time, Lori Scanling, heard that I was actually signed up for classes, she asked me to apply for the position at Yakuske Takahide. And part of the process was going into interview and doing kind of like this here, having the students asking all the questions, which to me was great because the students should be able to feel safe to ask questions because it's your right. And I actually started working at Yakuske Takahide going on 16 years or over 16 years now. And ever since then, I've been going to college and actually now done with college years later. So my biggest obstacle was not having a degree and time.
How do you motivate a student when they're in a time of need?
I ask them how they're doing, if they feel safe, or if there's anything that I can do to help make sure that my courses stay interesting and up to date. Because as each generation comes and goes, so does the way of thinking. So for me, I try to keep an open communication with the students so that whenever we're working on something, you feel confident in that project.
What inspired you to be a frontline teacher?
An opportunity happened and I just jumped on it. And I've wanted to learn and teach it by watching all the other artists in Southeast. And one of those perks of being a teacher is actually being able to invite those artists into class when they have time. And not only do you folks get the opportunity to learn from that individual, I'm learning right along with you. So my motivation is to keep on learning as much as possible.
To listen to the rest of my interview, please go to ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
This is here. On our last show, we played the beginning of Colin Kendra's interview with Andy Lee. Here is the conclusion.
What are some obstacles you overcame when you started to be a coach?
I still wanted to play. And so one of the things was there has to be a self-awareness that your job isn't to be the best player on the team you're coaching. So sometimes I would catch myself teaching them to shoot and I was doing all the shooting. Or I would try to teach them to dribble and I was doing all the dribbling. And it's about letting go of yourself as a player and becoming a coach and knowing when your audience is no longer listening. And sometimes, so I had to learn that golden moment when they'd gotten the message, shut up and move on. And so, and communication, you know, is a big deal. Listening, some people listen so that they can speak. They're just waiting for you to stop. So that they're not listening to you. They're just waiting for you to stop talking. And so for me, it was listening, learning to listen, to hear what my players had to say. So I think my teams got better as my players realized I valued their input. Coach, that play's not working, or coach, could we try this? Or coach, I'd like to suggest that we take more timeouts or that we run more. And so as I became a better coach when I started listening to my players.
What advice has another coach given you that you will always remember?
that losing will make you better. And I didn't know what that meant at the time. Bert Adams was the coach at Yakutat and a valued friend, retired coach now. And my very first year at Sitka, we won 3 out of 27, 28 games. And I didn't know what he meant at the time, but what he really meant was that when that season ended, I went right to work on the next season. I watched video, I studied, I became a student of the game. And because he knew that my competitive fire wasn't going to allow me to just sit back and repeat what I'd done the year before that led to the losing. That, and so I put more time into player development. I flew to talked to college coaches and flew down to Gonzaga and other places and watched practices and basically took the best of what other people did and put it into my – a lot of – there's not very new things in most sports. Things have been done for 100 years. You just have to figure out how to make them work. And so I would go to high school basketball player practices of successful coaches and college practices and bring back ideas and then make them my own. And so so the advice was losing will make you a better coach. And over time it did.
Lastly, before your career as a coach, what did you do?
Oh, my goodness. So I worked across the street as the director of the Zach Gordon Youth Center. I was the superintendent of youth corrections at the Johnson Center for 13 years. I was the executive director of the West Seattle Y for 1 year. My job was to open the Y to get it started. It was the first YMCA in a low-income housing development. And there were people emigrating from the Vietnam War, Hmongs, Cambodians, Laotians. And so my job was to open up a social gathering place for them. And so I taught kindergarten K-1 at Gastineau Elementary School. I was the worst kindergarten teacher in the history of kindergarten. It was not like the movie, Kindergarten Cop or whatever that was. It was, if you can't find them, you can't teach them, you know. And so, but I found out that I was very good with kids that were at risk. And I had empathy and I was interested in, how their lives would turn out. And so that became part of my coaching. And now I get to do the two things that I'm passionate about. I'm a counselor and I'm a coach.
That is the end of the interview. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to our show. To listen to our full interviews, please go to ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. We want to thank
Sisters Kevin, Allen, and Alicia Marriott,
Liz Medicine Crow and Della Cheney,
Heatley Ish, Lyle James,
Andy Lee,
KTOO,
Will Chronic,
and Tribal and Family and Youth Services. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Hanson Grass and listeners like you.
Our theme music is by Indian Agent. To listen to individual interviews, see links to the music we played, or to be on the show yourself, check out our websites at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. We'll see you next week.
And happy birthday to Jaylen. Say good. Yeah.
Thank you.